Welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I'm Scott Nye.
I am David Bax. Tyler Smith is, of course, still not with us on the podcast, though he is still with us very much in this earthly realm.
And has been with us on the podcast occasion. Well, with you anyway.
With me, yeah. I spent Saturday with him, he's moved to a new facility, so I think it'll work out pretty well to record from there the way we did from the last facility. But part of the problem right now is it being the time of year it is, all our episodes are kind of like about end of the year stuff, and he like hasn't, you know, understandably, because he's been in a hospital since August and in a coma for part of that, he's not entirely up to date on 2022 movies. So we did watch we watched Banshees of Inisherin together on Saturday. If you want to know what's going on with Tyler, you can find out at caringbridge.org/visit/Tyler and Jennifer Smith. I'll say it again, caringbridge.org/visit/Tyler and Jennifer Smith. There's somewhere in there, there's a link to the GoFundMe, but you can also find the GoFundMe, on a post pinned to the top of the homepage at battleshippretension.com, where you can help Tyler and his family with their mounting medical costs. So check that out. Also check out tweakedaudio.com. Tweakedaudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of colorful colors and stylish styles. They look great. They sound great. I use them each and every day of my life. I actually do. I am not using them right now. I'm saying this for our guest benefit, who called me out for not, who pointed out that I wasn't wearing Tweaked Audio earbuds, but I actually do use them every day when they're plugged into my work laptop. I use them today. I was listening to a bunch of stuff. Should I be funny? And because I listened to a whole someone put a list of like the 25 best brutal death metal and gore grind albums of 2022, and some of those have such funny like names. The thing about brutal death metal and gore grind is I think the guys who make it think that it's like, this is beyond death metal, this is like, this is not for the faint of heart. But I think if you don't have any knowledge of death metal at all and you heard brutal death metal, I think your first reaction would be to laugh. not to be like, "Ooh, these guys are scary."
It's
like,
yeah,
it's funny, the brutal end of things. Instead I'll talk about an actual, I mean, I like some brutal death metal. I'll mention one that's both a really good album and a kind of funny band name. The band is called Vaginal Addiction, and the album is called Indulging in Barbarism. That's actually a really good brutal death metal album if you like that kind of stuff. But I'll talk about a regular death metal band who put out one of the best, I would say one of the top two death metal albums of 2022. They're called Ripped to Shreds, and the album is called Jubian. That's literally what I was listening to right before we hit record when I was walking my dog. Ripped to Shreds are awesome and sounded great on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds. They're available at a low price at tweakedaudio.com, but if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low price and no shipping charges. So please go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Scott?
Yo.
You're here on an episode that Tyler wasn't on last year. This is the third new annual addition to our annual year-end wrap up stuff. We're talking needle drops, best needle drops in movies of 2022. You're here.
As we know, Tyler hates music, famously. So it made sense that he would skip it. I joke. He's probably knows more about music than I do.
Yeah, he did tell, I don't know, he didn't tell me to bring this up on the show, but he did like the multiple Bowie needle drops in Glass Onion. So I hope I didn't just steal one from anybody. But Tyler did say he liked the multiple uses of David Bowie. But joining us as he has joined us for the past 2 years on this episode, he used to do a really good podcast called Previously On. In fact, he might recognize this little soundboard here. It's our old friend Sean Ingram.
Hi, thanks
how
for
you doing?
Having me. Good yeah. to be back. Just a year later, I'm back.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this you started this. I mean, you didn't suggest it as an episode, but it was something you always used to like text me about, like, hey, yeah, what were your favorite needle drops this year?
We've talked about it for years. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I finally had the genius idea of just making it and
put it on the show.
Make every conversation content.
Yeah. That's the goal of the future.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. So we've narrowed our choices down to five, which is, we were saying before we started recording, was maybe a little bit easier this year than easier to narrow down this year because
there was less to choose from, it seemed.
Yeah, there weren't as many big needle drops, or there weren't as many big needle drop movies. I mean, I mentioned Glass Onion has a ton of music in it, and there's, you know, another one that may or may not come up. It's on at least two of our reserve lists in case there are overlaps. But this year didn't have a ton of movies that were like wall to wall needle drops. So maybe there was no P.T. Anderson movie this year. No, I don't know, Scorsese, no Tarantino.
I wonder if the songs are getting more expensive and budgets are just slimming down. And it also feels like falling out of fashion a little bit.
I was about to ask if it's a music industry thing, if something's changing in that regard. And it's,
well, they're not making as much money on albums, so gotta turn it out.
They probably are.
The fees are raising. Yeah.
But yeah, Scott, you also make a good point that maybe like the era of that being a cool thing to do is coming to an end. Maybe more and more directors are choosing to go with original music or classical music or something.
Yeah, I think so. I just remember, like, I loved Last Night in Soho. It was on my top 10 last year, I think it came out. But it felt like out of step to have that much music in a movie. It's like, oh, this used to be like super common, but now it feels like unique and strange.
Yeah. Yeah.
Am I wrong? But that movie felt like even that was less than he had used in previous movies.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe you're right.
Well, definitely, it'd probably be less than Baby Driver, since that whole movie is about like a guy who listens to music.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. All right. So, I will start, so we're going to go do five, top five. I'm going to go alphabetically by movie title, 'cause that's how I've done it the last 2 years. There's no reason anybody else needs to do that. That's just how I'm going to go. Also I have, ground rules that are just my own. I'd love to hear your guys' ground rules you set for yourself. I generally avoided end title music.
Same.
I also, and this was hard for me in one case that I know, I think Scott agrees, I also avoided songs that were written for the movie.
Yeah, same. I had to cut one major one because of that.
Okay, so if we all avoided that, that means we all, or at least, I don't know if Sean's seen it, but we didn't do the Tinder Sticks title song Stars at Noon from Stars at Noon, which is a great song and a great scene.
Listen to it all the time.
Yeah.
Great music, yeah.
Yeah. But
not a needle drop.
So what so also my rules are like it would be too easy to just here's my favorite songs that were in movies. You know what I mean?
Oh, totally. It's all about
this is about like the use of the song in this in the scene. And so sometimes these movies aren't anywhere near my top 10 list there, but they just had really good scenes. Where did you guys fall on like diegetic music? If the character is actually listening to it, because I actually have a couple of those, but I considered like, is that a needle drop or not?
To me, it is, and okay. I have a few of those.
Okay.
Yeah, I think all but one of mine are diegetic.
Yeah, me too. Okay. You know, well, I'm the host, so I'll start. How about we go me, Scott, and then Sean?
All right.
Sean's the guest expert, so he should be in the cleanup spot. He should be yeah, like the, you know, you put the fastest guy at the end of your swim relay team, you know.
Sure, we all know that.
Yeah. So like I said, I'm going all right, I'm skipping a big one in the hopes that somebody else did it, but also, you know, we're not really bound by rules. We can, like, at the end, we can out some that didn't make our list. So I'm going to skip a big one in the hopes that somebody else does it. And I'm going to start with Barbarian and the use of Donovan's Ricky Ticky Tavi.
You got mine.
Which, really?
Yeah, that's on my list. That was on my list.
Because Barbarian is a horror movie and a good one, but also made by someone with comedy roots and comedy chops. And the cut from a character dying in a very brutal, horrible, bloody way.
And very surprising way.
Yeah. And then the sudden cut to Justin Long driving down the coast on the other side of the country, singing along to Ricky Ticky Tavi by Donovan, made me laugh out loud. I'm sorry that I took one from you, Sean.
No, I mean, obviously, yeah, it's a great one. Did you guys know that song? I feel like is it from a cartoon or an animated, or was it used in that old cartoon or something? Or
It might be. I think I know it because I didn't really know a lot of Donovan until I started dating Natalie, and Natalie really likes Donovan because her dad really likes Donovan. And so, especially like during quarantine time, we would, like, at the end of every workday, we would put on a record and play cards. That was, you know, and so we listened to plenty of Donovan during quarantine time. So I just know it because I know Donovan now.
Yeah, I mean, it's too bad you didn't see the movie in theaters, David, because that moment killed. Oh, I mean, yeah. That whole section, yeah. The whole Justin Long section was like so refreshingly fun with an audience. That moment was so unexpected. Even for a movie that, like, was advertised or at least talked about as, like, you don't want to read anything about it, you want to cut and go in fresh. But even that, like, really caught us all off guard and was, like, so refreshing.
Yeah. All right, then. I guess, Scott, you're up next.
All right. Since you skipped it, I'll fall on the grenade and go with After Sun. The Under Pressure cue, which isn't really even a cue because they, like, stretch and, like, what's the word for it?
Getting screwed?
Yeah, basically, like, they, like, take the raw track and really, like, tear it apart.
Yeah, they didn't just get the music, they really got, like, the stems, or whatever you would call it.
The first portion of the song is straight, and then it goes into, like,
sort of separates out the, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it comes at, like, the climax of the movie, in a movie that's fairly reserved emotionally, but feels like this great, like, emotional outpour. And feels like kind of the stretching point of, I don't know, not quite her sanity, but like certainly her grief and feeling of incompleteness, which is mirrored in kind of the song's incompleteness. And it's all kind of like wraps around this dance club stuff that had been like peppered throughout the movie, where there's this like huge flashing lights and like people, and you get the people moving in like kind of irregular patterns. And so to have that with such a great song that we all know and kind of morphed around that. It's tough to really, like a lot of things in the movie, it's tough to really pinpoint the effect that it has and really describe it. But everyone who's seen it rightly identifies that moment as a major highlight in it.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you mentioned the dance club scenes, which I have been thinking of as dream sequences. I don't know.
I kind of have too, that's
how,
yeah.
How other people would describe them, but the rest of the movie, the main body of the movie, a big bold needle drop like that would feel out of place, I think.
Yeah, totally.
But it's got this other mode that it goes into that sort of like it dips into from time to time and then explodes in that end sequence. Yeah,
but it kind of somehow feels like of a piece. I don't know. There's so much of that movie that I can't figure out how she pulled it off, and that's definitely one of them.
Okay, Sean.
Yeah. Well,
now that we've cleared the field a little bit for you.
Well, not to heap praise on one film, but I will go with After Sun as well. And my pick is Tender by Blur. Mm. And that is the sequence when, I know the chronology is kind of loose to me,
but yeah,
they're just talking. They're talking about if he'll ever go home or, you know, return to Glasgow, right?
I don't remember that, but yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. And it's just a song in the background. It's a beautiful, lovely song. It's a tender song, appropriately titled.
Yeah.
And Scott, like you just said, it's kind of hard to pin down to me what makes it work. Cause this, it is kind of emotionally reserved, that scene. It's not like a, I don't know. They're having a serious conversation, but it's not, no one's getting emotional about the topic, but it really struck me on watch. And it happens to be a great song. That's not the only reason to include it, but that's a bonus for sure.
It is a great song. One of my favorites of all time and one of Natalie's favorites of all time, despite Under Pressure being the big climactic moment. Mm-hmm. Natalie and I left After Sun both humming Tender because we both just love that song. And also the main bulk of the movie is a period piece in which that song would have been current, right? If I'm doing the math right.
I don't know. It was hard to figure out when exactly the movie was taking place.
Okay. Maybe I just assumed because of things like Tender that
assumed it was like 20 years previous, which was
like mid 90s. Yeah.
So yes.
Yeah. All right. I guess I'm up again and I'm going to go with another singing along in the car scene, but a very different character. I'm going with the song You Make Me Feel Like Dancing by Leo Sayer, which Ben Affleck and his daughter sing along to in the car in Deep Water.
Oh, I totally forgot about that scene.
He's like driving her to school, but then it comes back at the end, like after he's done things and gotten away with it. Sorry for the dancing around spoilers for Deep Water. I don't know. The movie has kind of a sick, dark sense of humor. I found the movie, I don't know if the movie would be described as a comedy, but I found a lot of it kind of funny. There's definitely something darkly funny about ending with a little girl singing along to a Leo Sayer song after everything we've seen. So good choice for Adrian. How do you say his name? Lin?
I try to avoid it.
Lin? Yeah.
Definitely Lin A.
Well, no, actually, I used to work with someone whose first name was Lin A and it was spelled like his last name.
Weird.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to also go the sing along in the car scene, as long as just we're staying with consistent themes here, and go with Christopher Cross's Sailing in Ambulance, which is like the greatest freaking moment. Like the tensest movie where they're like, it's 2-hour car chase, guns are flying, people are performing surgery in the back of the ambulance. And then out of nowhere, Jake Gyllenhaal's just like, I got a chill. And he puts on Christopher Cross's Sailing. Yeah. And he and his brother sing along and totally rock out to it. And then Jake Gyllenhaal's just like, it's not chilling me out at all. It's so good. And it's just like this beautiful moment of peace. And like Michael Bay gets the camera just rolling like right in the front of the car. So you're like, you kind of feel like you're sailing along with them. You're starting to hit the groove. And you get like the cutaway shots of... I can't remember the character's name, but Isaac Gonzalez's nurse like looking at them singing, and so it's like cuts between them hearing the music and her just watching them goofily singing along to it. And just making them look like bigger idiots than they already are. It's such a great, totally unexpected moment in a movie like that Michael Bay both like undercuts and completely like dives into the sincerity and the feeling of it. Beautiful moment.
I agree. And I also, I don't know if I mean, that song's fine. I don't know. I'm not a big Christopher
Cross. Yeah, it's whatever.
That, that album has a place. It like reminds me of my parents, because when I was in high school and I was like punk rock and getting into vinyl, I like bought a record player and I only had so much of my own vinyl. So I started looking at what my parents like had. And yeah, they had that album. So nice. I listened to it. I probably didn't like even, I liked it even less at the time, cause I was like too punk.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I still have a fondness for that album for that reason. Sean, you're up.
Kimmy, play Sabotage. That, yeah, I mean, that's a great, I think that sequence is so cool.
Yeah.
And so fun.
It really is.
Yeah. And a great, yeah, it's a great pick. It's like, it's character based. I think it works for her and it makes sense and it soundtracks the scene really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely a shortlisted movie. That movie has a few in it, but few, yeah, that's yeah. Okay, I said I wasn't ranking these, but this next one for me, my third, is it's my number one needle drop, and I'm glad I got to it and got to this movie before Scott did, because I'm wondering if he has something on there. But I'm gonna go with a James Darren song called "Goodbye Cruel World" from The Fablemans. The
another favorite one's one.
Okay, yes, the ditch day at the beach sequence, the montage of him shooting all his classmates, you know, filming all his classmates and as they're having fun, but also staging things, and it's this incredibly just like fun 60s teen like teeny bopper type song called "Goodbye Cruel World." Goodbye Cruel World. I'm off to join the circus. It's a very fun song. And yeah, because I've seen The Fablemans twice, and I think I won't say it because Scott might have it. The first time I saw The Fablemans, I think I was leaning in a different direction. The second time I saw it, this was the sequence that stood out to me. It's and it is like almost a textbook needle drop, because like we see him like agree to do the ditch day thing because his girlfriend's dad has got this great 60 millimeter camera, and then like as soon as it cuts to the beach, that song starts and all the kids are like running on the beach. It's a great like textbook needle drop moment.
Well, I'll go ahead and go with my moment of The Fablemans, which is also my number one pick, and it's the showing of that beach movie, which uses the tracks "If You Want to Be Happy" by Jimmy Soul and "Limbo Rock" by Chubby Checker. The whole construction of the prom scene to me is just unreal and the best part of the movie. And I kind of have this on my list partially as a way to talk about the best part of the movie, because I don't think The Fablemans will make my top 10. But so like when they're pulling into the prom, Sam's parents have just said they're going to get a divorce. Like he's at his lowest, but he's going out with this super hot, fun girl who like gives the best performance I've ever seen ever. She's so good. And they're like,
yes, I did both the OFCS and the HCA.
Yeah.
Tried to nominate Chloe East. Didn't work either.
Fruitless pursuit.
Yeah.
But so they're like having a sweet little moment in the car. But then as soon as they get into the kind of like dance hall, things start to take a turn. We get like the kid with the bad trumpet coming in on the band playing on stage. And he like tells her he loves her, but she just like doesn't care. She's like, it's high school, we're gonna break up at some point. And she says to him, sometimes we can't fix things, Sam, all we can do is suffer. And at that moment the principal's like, time to show the film. And he's like this is your big moment, Sam, your Technicolor masterpiece. And he's still like, the thing that Sam is like tagged with through the entire movie is people are always condescending to his hobby, and what is really like his big life pursuit. And so like for him it is kind of a big moment, but like he's just been broken up with effectively, his parents have just gotten a divorce, and the people are still kind of making fun of him. But then the movie starts, and "If You Want to Be Happy" by Jimmy Soul kicks in, which like might be a little misogynist, but it's a total banger. Yeah. And people are really into it and they're cheering on the movie, and you can see the effect that's having on them, the effect it's having on him, to see all that happening with the crowd. And it's just for a brief moment, they're making things a little bit better, that his like creation is having this effect. And to have all that paired against, yeah, this like big boppy, happy, weird song amidst all the sadness. It's, I think, one of the more emotionally complex moments that Spielberg's pulled off. And that is, he's doing it about his own childhood is all the more insightful. yeah, so that moment completely got me.
Yeah, I also love the movie in that scene. The principal is James Urbaniak, by the way. Can't go wrong with James Urbaniak. I actually have thoughts that both times I watched the movie, that bad trumpet player has really stood out to me.
Hmm.
Not just because the trumpet player is bad, but because the girl who's singing, who's like the ex-girlfriend,
like annoyed with him,
and is very good, good singer. So I think because part of what Spielberg is saying about Sammy and thus himself is this guy is better at this thing than anyone at his social circle and his level, better than they can even comprehend. And I think it's kind of that moment is kind of a tip of the hat to like Spielberg's not the only preternaturally talented teen at this high school. This girl is also a really good singer, but high school is a limiting place where you have to sing with the best available trumpet player. Yeah. But the last thing I'll say is, this was the one I considered, but another reason that I didn't pick it is because, you know, sometimes a song is used so well in a movie that it then belongs to that movie. Like,
I know what you're going to say then, and I get that. Yeah.
Yeah. Stuck in the Middle with You. That's Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
If You Want to Be Happy is Mermaids. Cher and Winona Ryder and Christina Ricci dancing around the kitchen, singing that song, which
is good.
There's something very cute about, like you mentioned, the misogyny of that song, and something very cute about three ladies singing in the kitchen. And I love mermaids. So.
Can I do a tangent here?
Please. We got to fill the time.
What are the big Spielberg needle drops? I'm probably just tired and blanking, but I feel like, you know, obviously you go instantly John Williams, which is score.
Yeah.
It's like, is this something for him to have like two big ones in the same movie?
Have some good ones in Catch Me If You Can.
Catch Me If You Can.
I'm trying to remember what they would be though, just because it's a period piece and kind of breezy. I'm sure he uses music in that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good question.
He uses music well, but I can't think of, you know, needle drop moments like the kind we're talking about, too many of those in his movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now that's going to be something that's
going to ruminate on.
Occupy me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to, I can't think of, any big ones off the top of my head. Cause every moment I'm thinking of is score.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
all right. Well, listeners, okay, after that, I'll just do a fun one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jackass Forever, Alternative Ulster by Stiff Little Fingers. It's one of the first stunts, the human ramp.
Okay.
And it's just fun. The song is an earworm. If you've heard it, I'm not going to sing it, but if you've heard it, I'm sure you'd remember it. And I've always had a fondness for Jackass. You know, I love Jackass. But specifically the music they use, you know, it's very, because it's informed so much by like skate culture, which is very like punk informed or like alternative 80s alternative rock and stuff like that. And it's funny, it's kind of a serious song about how shitty life in Belfast was at the time in the late 70s. And it's soundtracking this completely harebrained stunt that these guys are doing, but I think it's a good example of just like a fun, taking a fun thing and making it more fun by throwing a fun song on top of it.
I like Stiff Little Fingers. I've only seen the first Jackass movie.
No kidding.
I haven't caught up with the Jackass is art house cinema like take that seems to have developed around Jackass Forever.
I never turned my nose up at Jackass.
I've always liked it. I never loved it. I mean, I remember the first movie being very funny. The first movie has the like trampolining into the ceiling fan thing, yeah. which is so stupid and so funny to me. Yeah, and I barely ever watched the show because I never really had, I didn't really have cable at the time that Jackass was on. So I don't have that much. I used to work as a PA at a place that did motion capture mostly for video games. And so I was there the days that they were doing the mocap for the Jackass video game. So I met some of the, I had a cigarette with Steve-O.
I don't think I knew that existed.
Yeah, I was just about to look it up.
No kidding.
Yeah. All right. So wait, am I next?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hold on. I was looking up Jackass. Jackass the Game.
Yeah, I just found it.
From
PlayStation 2.
Released in 2007, which is, yeah, that's right.
It's kind of late. Okay.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I guess because Jackass number two, the movie would have been.
Is that around
that year or the year before?
Movie?
That, the second movie, second I think, movie? Was 06 or 07.
Okay.
So, okay. Yeah. All right, I'm up next and I've lost because I was looking up video games. I lost what I had next. Okay. This one is very much about a great use in a movie. I do like this movie, but it's not, you know, a great movie by any sense. Jeff Baena's Spin Me Round is the movie. This is a movie in which Alison Brie plays the manager of an Olive Garden type of restaurant. I think it's called Tuscan Garden. No, Tuscan. It's not Tuscan. It's Tuscan something. She gets chosen to go to this manager's retreat / training that's in Italy. To only the best managers get to go. But we kind of realize it's actually just meant to be a breeding ground for the billionaire who owns the chain, played by Alessandro Nivola, to try and seduce women. And so she gets kind of like sucked into this world of this. This is one. This is low key, like, or at least like low profile. Another one of the like 2022 rich people are insane movies. There's a bunch of those.
Yeah.
Have you guys talked about this?
I don't know if we've talked about it at length. We definitely haven't done an episode, but
I've been talking about it with friends. It's such a, it's a moment, as they say right now.
Yeah. Yeah. She gets sucked into this world, and there's a part where one of Alessandro Nivola's billionaire friends, played by Fred Armisen, is hosting a party. The song Lady in Red by Chris de Burgh comes on while Fred Armisen is dancing with Alison Brie, and he starts to lip sync along with the entire song. And it's like this scene is like the first time that she's been swept off her feet by this charming, handsome billionaire Alessandro Nivola, and this party is the first time when she's starting to realize like these people are weird. And so this is kind of the moment that things start to get weird, of like Fred Armisen like lip-syncing along like beyond the point that it's like cute or sexy or charming. He's just like lip-syncing the entire song while dancing with her. It's a very funny moment in a pretty decent movie.
All right.
I liked that movie.
Yeah,
good pick.
Yeah, I liked The Little Hours too, which is the only other one of his movies that I've seen. I feel like he's kind of a divisive director, but he gets great casts.
Did he do the one she wrote, Horse Girl? Did he do
that? I think he did that too.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was all right. That was all right.
Okay.
All right. Let's see, what do I want to go with next? I think I'll go with Bones and All for dropping Lick It Up by Kiss. Which is like totally sets the kind of like burnout vibe that the kids are living in. You know, the film's about these two like kind of cannibal kids played by Timothée Chalamet, and I've forgotten the main woman's name.
It's Taylor Russell.
Taylor Russell. Yeah.
How could you forget Taylor Russell from Escape Room?
I always wanted to see the Escape Room, but I missed him completely.
See, that's a David and Tyler fave.
No, I know.
Escape Room. And also she's great in Waves too, which is a movie that it took me two viewings to really love.
Waves kicks ass. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah, I found it obnoxious at first, and then I watched Krisha. Is that his first movie?
Yeah.
Is it Krisha? Yeah. And I really liked Krisha, and I was like, let me go back and give Waves on the shot. And I was like floored by it when I watched it the second time.
Yeah, Bones and All has a similar kind of vibe of, you can find it very obnoxious at first. It's very earnest and obvious about what it's doing in terms of like setting these kids up as outcasts and finding themselves and all that stuff. I found it very sweet in the kind of like dorm room poster movie kind of way, where we talked about a couple weeks or months ago at this point.
I want to interject here because we did an episode and I called them bedroom wall poster movies and you called them dorm room poster movies. And I feel like that's a difference.
Because a dorm room
poster, there's something performative about it. There's something like,
okay,
because there's something saying like, this is what I want. I'm starting this new chapter of my life and meeting new people in this dorm, which is a semi-public place. This is what I want people to know about me. But the bedroom wall posters are like really your like
just for you.
Sanctuary.
Yeah.
I say it bedroom wall poster movies.
I think Bones and All could be a performative thing as well as the thing you kind of put out there. I think, you know, I mean, I don't know what the kids are into. They apparently don't even watch movies anymore. But for a certain type of kid, I this would be a very key movie, at least, you know. When I think about being like 17 to 19, I like the movie a lot. If I'd seen it then, it would have meant the world to me. But Lick It Up by Kiss, which is a total banger. And people make fun of me for still being into Kiss. I don't really care. Kiss is great. And just seeing Timothée Chalamet rock out to that, I was like, this movie gets exactly the culture these kids are coming up in and exactly the vibe the movie needs to take itself seriously, but not be pretentious about it. I guess it can be a little raggedy.
I'll throw out right now because it was going to be in my honorable mentions or my reserve, a different Bones and All track, which is Save a Prayer by Duran Duran. Imagine you went into Bones and All not knowing that it was about cannibals and you're just watching a movie that appears to be about a kind of like outcast shy girl, right, who's like from the poor side of town, who's like trying to work her way into this friend group of the more affluent characters. And she finally gets invited to one of their sleepovers. Her dad doesn't want to let her go, so she sneaks out and goes to the sleepover, and they're like having girl time and they're really bonding, and the song Save a Prayer by Duran Duran is on, and then she bites off the girl's fucking finger. It's the first introduction of gore in a movie that has a lot of gore, or at least when its gory scenes are very gory, and it's such a shocking moment. I love Save a Prayer.
Right on.
Okay.
Yeah, we were saying there's not a lot of movies that are wall to wall needle drops or heavy needle drops, but I think that's kind of an exception. There are a bunch in that movie.
Yeah.
And as I recall, as a music nerd, there's a Joy Division song, and then I think the next like needle drop on the soundtrack is a New Order song, which is kind of a funny
yeah
choice by him.
All right, number four for Sean, right? Okay. Is that where we are?
Yeah,
that's so. Right.
yeah
All right, I'm going to go with a very literal needle drop.
No.
In No.
Oh, no. Oh, okay.
It's Exuma, the Obeah Man by Exuma. I'm not quite sure on the pronunciation. Okay. Sorry. But that's a very, what's the sister's name?
Kiki Palmer is the actress. I don't know the character.
She literally puts it on the turntable. You see a brief glimpse of the cover, and it plays. And it's very self-conscious or self-aware, because it's the lyrics are about this character Exuma the Obeah man who comes from space, and he has these funny lyrics, like he has the teeth of a frog and the tail of a goat or something like that. But the whole song is about, like, he's this alien visitor and here's what he's about and here's what he's doing. Now, normally, I don't know, that's a very tricky thing to do. And maybe it works a little more because the song is not super well known.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know it.
You didn't notice it in the context of the movie, maybe?
No.
Okay. But yeah, yeah. I don't know. I thought it... I don't know. It fit with the tone of the movie. There's mm-hmm. a little self-consciousness maybe to the whole picture. But I liked that one and I thought it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think there's a lot of self-consciousness in note, but there are parts of it like that, that when they land, they're so good.
Yeah.
Other, not a needle drop, but other rock related stuff in Nope are the t-shirts. Most, most especially Keke Palmer's bitchin' Jesus Lizard t-shirt that she wears for most of the movie. And then the other dude, the like Angel. Dude who works at Fry's, what's his name?
Angel.
Angel. Yeah. He wears the Rage Against the Machine, right. T-shirt yeah. from Evil Empire, I think. Yeah. Good one. All right. Well, my last one until I throw out some honorable mentions is also a literal needle drop and also from a movie that I thought was decent, just okay. Ty West's X. They get to their cabin, they check in with the creepy caretakers, then they spend the day shooting porn or swimming unbeknownst to Mia Goth with an alligator, and all this stuff happens, and then they get to finally relax at the end of the night with ham and cheese sandwiches and beers, and they drop the needle on the song Act Naturally, the Loretta Lynn version of Act Naturally, which was actually new to me. It's a song that I know as a Buck Owens song. It's a great moment. This kind of like dovetails in a way with Riggy Tiggy Tavi, like the moment of a horror movie having that relaxed moment. Like everyone's cool, no one's in danger, we're having a good time, we're chopping up these blocks of cheese and these slices of ham, we've spent the day fucking and blowing each other, let's just relax. And it's a really great song too.
Yeah, this was almost made my list. It's a great pick, great scene.
Mm-hmm.
I missed X. I only saw Pearl.
And I haven't seen Pearl.
Pearl is great, but
yeah.
no needle drops that I recall.
Okay. Yeah, I was trying to think. I don't think they did because it's like a farm in the 30s or 20s.
Something like that, yeah.
Whip out the gramophone. All right, my last proper pick is the only one that I broke the rule on an end credits song, but just because it's been churning in my head so much. And, it overlaps with sort of the end of the movie into the end credits, but it's in Corsage, Italy by Soap and Skin, a song I was completely unfamiliar with, but it's such a beautiful moment where Vicky Creeps like jumps off the back of a boat into like oblivion and then like spends the entire credits dancing while this super beautiful song plays over it, and it's a very strangely peaceful and soothing way to end the movie. That's it's a hard movie to describe really, but it's very politically engaged and somewhat enamored of the luxury in which she's living, and to just have this moment where she's really just indulging in that while sort of like giving into a sense of oblivion was a very cool way to end the movie.
This is another movie that I have seen twice, and both times left with that song in my head. I was completely unfamiliar with Soap and Skin as an artist. It looks like it's a one woman experimental music project. Sorry,
what's the
Soap and Skin?
No, what was the movie?
Corsage. Oh,
Corsage. Oh, it's okay.
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, it's a biopic of what's her face, Sissy, the Empress of Austria.
Austria. Mm. Yeah. But yeah, I guess she's been Soap and Skin. Her real name is Anya Franziska Plaszk. Has been active since 2006, but I didn't know about her. Corsage also has, I don't think these really count as needle drops because they're like covers, like diegetic covers, but it has people playing anachronistic modern songs. You know, there's a scene where they listen to a harpist play As Tears Go By, and there's another scene where they're taking like dance lessons or something, and the guy is playing on like a little, I don't know what you even call it, it's like a ukulele, but Austrian, I guess, playing help me make it through the night, the Kris Kristofferson song. It's a really, really great, there's a couple of great moments, great use of music. That's an amazing movie.
Did you see Catherine Called Birdie, the Lena Dunham?
Yes. Yeah. That
did a similar thing with the covers of yes, modern songs. Yeah. On the,
yeah. But all by the same woman. I forget her name.
Misty Miller.
Misty Miller. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like all 90s stuff and it's all covers. Yeah. I liked Catherine Called Birdie.
It's not quite period appropriate, I think, but it's close enough as far as like instrumentation and stuff.
Mm. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So are we on to John's last pick?
I guess so. Okay. I'm going to dip into my second choices here because I got sniped on a couple. This is the trouble with going third. Okay. I'll go with one we were talking about off mic. Wendell and Wild. And there's a few I could pick, but I will go with Germ-Free Adolescence by X-Ray Specs. And that's in the scene, in that particular scene, I think it's the one where, she discovers her spoilers, I guess, her yeah, resurrected parents in her former basement. But that whole, the majority of the soundtrack is sort of, takes the form, I think, of a mixtape of sorts, that her dad's favorites or her parents' favorites. And that was one of them. X-Ray Specs makes another appearance earlier in the movie. And I'm not, I'm not prepared to talk about it 'cause it was kind of reserved choice, but
yeah, we were talking about this because the all of the songs in the movie are rock songs by black musicians or black fronted bands.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because yeah, the unifying theme. Yep.
Yeah. In my honorable mentions is Ghost Town by the Specials, which is used when our introduction to the Scream Fair, which is, if you haven't seen the movie, is a horrifying, hellish, amusement park. Although that might have been breaking my, I don't know if this quite counts of like a song belonging to a movie, but Ghost Town is in the, when Tommy Lee Jones is giving Tom Sizemore the tour of the prison in Natural Born Killers. it's Ghost Town, and I kind of always associate it with that scene, but that's a personal thing because not everyone watched Natural Born Killers 80 times when they were in eighth grade.
Just like that whole soundtrack, and I like a unifying theme, and I think that worked.
All right, I am gonna just toss out a few that I didn't include. The first kiss between the two main characters in Cha-Cha Real Smooth, the song is called Forest Green by Big Red Machine. It's a nice moment. I almost expected Scott to pick this one, the Walker Brothers song In My Room in Peter Von Kant.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
He's kind of, after he's, you know, met the young, the new like source of his infatuation that will make up the movie and drive him crazy. The rest of the movie, he's sort of dancing around his apartment to this Walker Brothers song.
Sounds like I should see this because I love Fassbender and I love Scott Walker. So yeah,
there you go.
Yeah. It's a really,
a good movie. Yeah. Good. Jinx. And then a couple of others I will, I don't know if these even count. Well, here's one. The movie hasn't even come out yet, but I saw it at TIFF. A needle drop in a documentary, the documentary De Humani Corporis Fabrica, which is about, shot at a few different, French or Parisian hospitals. And the very end scene, you see, it's the nurses and hospital workers having kind of like a party. They're unwinding at the end of the day and they're listening to Blue Monday by New Order, by the way. Very, very loud.
Sorry, I keep interrupting your flow here. Are you guys Adam Curtis stuff at all?
Who is that?
He's a English documentarian. It's mostly
a video essayist.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's mostly
his YouTube channel got taken down for like copyright violations or something.
Wow.
Like too many of them.
Not that I heard about.
Was, or am I thinking of a different guy?
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe I'm thinking of a different guy.
Well, he does these long form documentaries. It's one of those things where some people say, oh, it's a movie. And some people say, no, it's a series. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're documentaries. And he has a lot of great needle drops. Although his last project, he dispensed entirely with them and didn't use any music. Hmm. So,
And then I want to ask you guys about a couple. First off, this isn't even really a needle drop because it's a piece of, well, I guess it's what I think of as a piece of score from another movie used. Mm-hmm. So Fire of Love uses Clouds Up by Air, which is from the Virgin Suicides soundtrack.
That counts.
That counts?
Yeah.
Okay.
Would you say like any of the Kill Bill stuff, for example? Because he, you know,
I see what you're saying. Like, or Wes, because it's not. Yeah,
I know Wes Anderson used a bunch of score from Indian movies and Darjeeling Limited.
Yeah,
that's another.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that, it counts as a needle drop, I guess. But it's also we said we generally doing like songs, not score. And this is does Clouds Up by Air count as score or is it a song?
I think it becomes a song.
Once when it's a needle drop.
Yes, when you remove it from the context, it was meant to score.
Okay.
To me.
Here's what I have a question for the panel here.
All right.
In Bodies, 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 before things go crazy.
This was on my...
They're dancing around to 212 by Azealia Banks.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt weird to me that this movie that is seems to be very much about like this generation now has them dancing to a song that is over a decade old.
2013,
okay. So not quite a decade old then. I thought it was like 20. I thought it was older than that, but that felt like a weird choice to me to use that song when this is supposed to be about youth. Like they're not like,
you think that
it's not about
the director's out of backwards. Touch. Is that what you're saying?
Do you think that's all it is? Is just that like the director didn't know that was a 10-year-old song?
No, I mean like the characters are all, let's say, 25-ish. So if that song came out when they're like 15, 16, they're still listening to that song.
That's a good
That makes sense. Yep,
that's a good call.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
There's another song in that movie. It's called Bored in the House, which I thought was a very appropriate. It's like a pandemic era rap song that Tyga made with this guy Curtis Roach, the rapper Tyga, and it's again, it's kind of like, you know, it's a little self-conscious or self-aware to put a song called Bored in the House in that movie.
Yeah.
Well, but yeah, that reason, like, it sounds like she's not out of touch after all,
right?
Yeah All right, those are my also Rans. What do you guys got anything else you wanted to toss out?
I mentioned this on our main episode, I think, for AFI wrap up, but the use of Let's Dance in Bardo False Chronicle of Handful of Truths is pretty great. The whole movie is like this Bowie weird, like, dream sequence. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
There's a sequence in a nightclub where, similar to After Sun, they play the song. In this case, it's to the right tempo, but it drops out all the music, so it's just Bowie's lyrics. And watching that in a theater at the New Art, which like really blasts the sound, is a pretty super cool sequence, because there's not like, there's big pauses between the lyrics and the song. It's not like it's constant lyrics. And so you just get like these people dancing, like there's music playing, but then just Bowie come in and every now and again just going, "Let's dance." And so, you know, the movie doesn't really hang together, but it's got a handful of these moments that are, they're pretty great. And then I did want to shout out, I know it's totally dumb, but it fits a very dumb movie, the use of Something in the Way by Nirvana in The Batman. Really sets the tone for the kind of movie that's like way overly self-serious and a little obvious about it, but which I still kind of enjoyed for that quality.
Did you like I didn't mind that, but I didn't think that he need to bring it. He brings it back at the end, right?
I think I remember bringing it back at some point. Yeah.
And I thought that was a little too much.
Well, the whole movie is a little too much. I think like by the time that song dropped, I was just like, all right, we're in.
Yeah.
This movie knows exactly what it wants, for better or worse. And I kind of appreciated that.
I didn't see The Batman. The movie, Something in a Way, doesn't belong to this movie, but I do remember, I don't know if you remember, in Jerry Maguire, Jerry O'Connell's character, who's kind of like the dumb like college recruit who's like trying to come up to the NFL, or he's being wooed by all the teams.
Yeah.
In his hotel room, he's playing Something in the Way on his guitar when Tom Cruise walks in.
Never, I don't think I picked that up.
Yeah.
Nice.
Sean, you got anyone you wanted to throw out?
I think most of them were covered. Yeah, okay. That bodies one. You had the X pick. You had Barbarian, which is one. Yeah. I think that's it. Should we mention, it's not quite in the field we're talking about, should we mention how Mahler's Fifth was in multiple movies this year?
Was it really? I mean, I know it was obviously it was in Tar. What else?
Decision to Leave. It's used multiple times.
Yeah.
Over the course of the movie.
I even thought that at the time. I completely forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's good. I like the movie. It's very effectively used there, I thought.
That reminded me, not since, was it 2017 when Okja and Free Fire both used John Denver's Annie's song for like big like climax, like they weren't subtle uses, they were like in the same year that same song for like big highlighted moments. That seems so strange to me. And then that was also the year that What it Take Me Home Country Roads or whatever was in both Logan Lucky and Alien Covenant. So he had like two John Denver songs that were both in two movies in the same year. The John Denver estate was rolling.
He was having a fire sale or something.
I guess so. Yeah. All right. This was a ton of fun. We'll do it again next year. Hopefully we'll have a richer, field of
this actually turned out well.
Pluck from.
There were a few I hadn't seen that I want to check out, and more than I had had occurred to me or I had known about. So turned out well.
All right. Well, I guess I got to see The Batman.
It's 3 hours, man. Buckle up.
So yeah. So you can find us at battleshipretention.com. Obviously, there's the link to the GoFundMe there. I'd say check out reviews, but I'm behind. You can check out my other podcast though. It's called The One Where I Met Your Mother. My wife Natalie and I watch an episode of Friends and an episode of How I Met Your Mother. We're getting into we're in mid-season 4, so I feel like we're getting into definitely far into big name guest star territory on Friends. I just watched an episode with Charlton Heston in it. So you can find that. Go ahead.
So when you run out of How I Met Your Mother, but you have friends left, are you going to dip into How I Met Your Father, or what are you going to do?
That's been suggested, but so far we've had a couple seasons
There's a good deal more Friends episodes, correct?
Yes.
It feels like a good chunk.
Yeah, so we're doing it by season. So we've had a couple seasons already where there were longer Friends seasons than How I Met Your Mother seasons. So for those episodes, we watched Friends and did our whole show, and then we did just a bonus discussion about me and Natalie's favorite undersung TV show of all time, Mystery Diners from the Food Network. And we have gotten at least one of our listeners, whom we call our friends and mothers, hooked on Mystery Diners, which is that's our mission in life, is to get more people to watch the most ridiculous TV show of all time, Mystery Diners. So you can find that at battleshipretention.com. You can email me at david@battleshipretention.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Davey Pretension. I'm also on Letterboxd, but I don't even know what my Letterboxd name is. But I've been trying to do more than just logging things, actually, like have some comments about stuff that I watch recently. Let's see. Let's go the same order we went. Scott, where can people find you?
I too am trying to post more on Letterboxd. Unfortunately, I wrote up a good deal of thoughts on other people's children while I was waiting in the car for a bit, and then opened another app and lost the entire thing I wrote. I'll start posting there eventually after I get over that heartbreak. But Letterboxd is solid. Yeah,
you can't draft in the app.
I was bored. I knew I had 20 minutes to kill, and then someone called me and ruined everything.
Yeah.
All right. Is that it?
Yeah, sure.
All right, Sean, where do you want people to find you on the internet?
I mean, I'm barely on the internet. I'm Jouster on Letterboxd if you want. I'm bad at it. I don't write reviews, but I do log and occasionally comment and stuff. That's probably it. I have a band. We're on the verge of changing our name, but.
Oh, really?
Yep. Yep.
This is news to me.
News to you. Yep. I'll get you the update on that, but currently it's at Spectre Exits, SpectreExits, we're on Bandcamp, Spotify, Apple Music, etc. That's it.
Yeah. You should use your Letterboxd more. You reminded me, sometimes I forget the people I know in real life also like can see my social media. Like I think of it as separate. It was funny, like I've had like people text me like, how could you only give one star to this movie? Right. Or like last weekend I was hanging out with you and your girlfriend and we were talking about Infinity Pool and your girlfriend was like, oh, you really liked that, and then like I hadn't even said anything about it yet.
Letterboxd away your secrets, all your
I guess so, yeah. All right. Thank you, Scott, for filling in for Tyler. Thank you, Sean, for being here once again. Thank you at home for listening.
And we'll get you next time.
Bye.
Bye.